This is the Happy Station, broadcasting to North and South America on 9,955 kilohertz from 1 to 155 UTC and from 15 to 1555 UTC.
This is Happy Station going back to the USSR.
Flew in from Miami Beach, BOAC. Didn't get to bed last night. On the way to paper bank was on my knee. Man, I had a dreadful flight. I'm back in the USSR. You don't know how lucky you are, boys. Back in the USSR.
Hello and welcome to Happy Station. I'm trying to do a really bad Russian accent. Hello there, everyone. Keith Pallow here with you for the next 55 minutes on the Happy Station show. And it's really nice to have you with me this week. And this edition of the show, by the way, is going to be airing to all regions for a reason. The reason being it is a special show, as you probably gathered from our opening. Now, normally we don't open with a full song, but I thought let's do things a little different today. And that is because we are going back to the USSR. We're going back, that's right, to the Soviet Union. Now, for those who have not been following the messages that I've been putting out on Facebook and a number of other places, why, you may ask, are we going back to the Soviet Union? And how are we going to go back to the Soviet Union? Well, let's take a listen now to a clip of my guest that was recorded way back in the mid-1980s on the World Service of Radio Moscow.
Country song there called Mountain Path, and that was especially for Dean Life in Rogersville, Tennessee, USA. And at this very point, I'd like to say hello to all our listeners in the United States of America. Tune in on 1040 AM. Don't let video kill the radio star. Keep it tuned to 1040 AM Radio Moscow. Hello there. And now here's a letter from Lori Deitner in Newcastle, Pennsylvania, USA, who writes, I've recently started listening to Radio Moscow. I enjoy it very much. I am a student at Slippery Rock University. I have traveled in the Soviet Union, and one thing I liked was the music. I would like to hear more contemporary and rock music from your artists. I especially like Time Machine, Autograph, and Aquarium. Young people everywhere like this type of music. If young people in my country hear the music of your young people, we shall see that we are not so different after all. Well, Laurie, that's what LRC is all about. Thanks for writing. I'm proving one more time that music makes friends. Here's Aquarium and dreams of something bigger.
Ah, you're probably saying, I know that voice. Well, you should. That was Vasily Strelnikov, who for more than 10 years hosted Vasily's Weekend on the World Service of Radio Moscow. And many of you may know that have been listening to shortwave for a number of years, especially in the 1980s. Radio Moscow was literally everywhere on the dial. And I remember as a boy in Canada, in Montreal, turning on a shortwave radio, and the easiest station to find was actually Radio Moscow World Service. And I still remember the frequency. The frequency was 11860 kilohertz, I believe, that was being relayed from Cuba. So that is who my special guest is today, Vasily Strelnikov of Vasily's Weekend. So stay tuned for the next 55 minutes as we bring you Happy Station Going Back to the USSR and Vasily's Weekend here on The Happy Station Show. Vasily, thanks a lot for taking some time out to join us here on The Happy Station. This is a bit of a thrill for me because the first time I heard Vasily's Weekend on Radio Moscow, you're going to laugh because I remember I was tuning my dad's shortwave radio, and I picked up this show that you were doing on Radio Moscow, and then at the end I heard from Radio Moscow in the USSR, and I said to myself, wait a minute, something's wrong here. This didn't fit in with the rest of the programming at Radio Moscow. Now, before we get to that, tell me a bit about yourself. I mean, where did you grow up? Did you grow up in the United States?
Yes, I was born and I grew up in the U.S. I was born in New York, but I grew up in a suburb of Washington, D.C., where basically I picked up all my love for radio and broadcasting in general. I mean, I love this business. And that's when I also started listening to shortwave radio in Chevy Chase, Maryland, after a friend of mine introduced me to shortwave radio. And that's actually around 73, 74 when I first heard Radio Netherlands, and actually heard the Happy Station. And I took this love for shortwave back to the Soviet Union when my parents, they came back to this country. And ever since then, I've been on the air. And that's basically the story.
Well, let me ask you, I mean, how did you end up in Radio Moscow? When you started there, what was it doing Vasily's Weekend, or were you doing the same other programs that everybody else was doing?
That's a good question, because in 1980, I wasn't even 18. I was about a month away from turning 18. Radio Moscow World Service was a 24-hour English language operation beaming to the whole world simultaneously. And they were looking for people, for people who could actually speak in front of a microphone. And my mom, actually, credit to her, she was the one that heard about it through some channels, because, I mean, this was the Soviet Union. You don't just go out, you know, and advertise on television or on radio and say, you know, major radio station looking for talent. She heard about this from some friends. I made some phone calls and I went over to audition. And after my first audition, about 30 minutes later, they offered me a full-time job. And my job description basically was announcer, which means I had to read commentary, I had to read news, and occasionally, you know, do a music program. But everything was scripted, and everything went through, you know, editors, producers, and censors, of course. So it wasn't really much creativity until about 82 when I thought, you know, this is the right time. I'm going to try to do my own request show. And I went to the bosses and said, look, I have this idea for a kind of a laid-back, easygoing show. And they said, yeah, do a pilot. Let's see what happens. And that's when it started, really.
That's rather unusual because when I used to listen to Radio Moscow back then, I mean, you can tell that everything was, you know, government control that was going through the censors. And I've worked in these environments before in Cuba and in China. But then when Vasily's Weekend came along, that must have been like a jolt to the system almost within Radio Moscow.
You know, I understand what you're saying, and sometimes I think about it to this day. In fact, I still have dreams about working at that organization. Scary dreams. But when I think about what you just said, you know, I come to the conclusion that the people running the place, the people that were in charge of all this massive gigantic propaganda machine, they weren't as dumb or narrow-minded as many people might have thought they were. They probably realized that this is a good idea. Let's let this kid go on the air and basically do whatever he wants to do. And that way, we'll probably be able to say to the world, or at least to our listeners around the world, that, hey, you know, we've got this young kid doing a weekly request show, and look, he's talking about going to discotheques in the evenings. Look, he's talking about major pop and rock stars in the Soviet Union. So maybe we'll just kind of use this opportunity to our, you know, we'll use this show to our advantage and say to the world, you know, this ain't such a bad place as you guys might think it is.
Now, when you started the show and after it was going for a while, was there any discussions within the organization to think, you know what, maybe we're onto something here. Maybe we should try this approach with our political programs, our culture shows, and other music programs?
You know, to make them a little bit more light, you mean?
A little bit more light.
You know, that talk started with when Mikhail Gorbachev came to power. And of course, Gorbachev is associated throughout the world with things like Perestroika, you know, and Glasnost, and you know this campaign of program of openness that he had. Because all of a sudden, you have these massive floodgates opening up, and you know you can play rock music on the radio, internal, you know, the local services, the internal services. You can show video clips on national television, video clips of pop and rock stars from England, from whatever, you know. So I guess it all started around 85, 86, when this warm, this human approach reached Radio Moscow. And there was a lot of freedom all of a sudden. A lot of young employees started, you know, doing shows like, you know, Youth Parade or all sorts of shows oriented at the youth and basically saying whatever they thought was necessary.
When you think back now, do you think that this was an extraordinary thing to do in the Soviet Union, especially at that time?
Oh, yeah. Listen, it was, you know, one of the highlights of one of the things I remember very well is, you know, if you take my example with the show that I did, Vasily's Weekend, I would get letters and postcards from around the world. And there was this one postcard from someplace in Oregon in the United States. And this guy says, hey, Vasily, let's see you take the, you know, stretch the boundaries of Perestroika. Bet you can't play Monty Python's Lumberjack song, you know. And I'm going, whoa, this is going to be cool. This is going to be fun trying to take this past the censors. So I, you know, and the show was pre-taped, of course. I mean, there were purely technical reasons for that. Not that it was censored or anything, but it was censored later. That's another topic. But anyway, so I put it in the show, and I take the tape to the editors, to the censors, basically, and then I get a call from one of them. They said, Vasily, we need to talk to you, comrade, you know, all right? So, I go in there and in the office, and this head censor says, well, you know, I listened to this song, but I don't understand. What is this lumberjack song, you know? What is this? And I make up a story. I say, well, you know, comrade censor, It's a song about the plight of the Canadian lumberjacks. It's a song about how they're exploited by the, you know, by the imperialists, by the capitalists. It's about, you know, how they work all day and then they have nothing better to do in the evenings than just basically have fun, you know, and kind of unwind. And he cuts me off right there and then he says, "Very good job, Comrade Strelnikov. More of such music in the show, please." You know, and he signs the paper and the thing goes on the air. So it was quite a unique situation. You know, he didn't really understand what the song was about. There were many instances like that.
It sounds like you and I have something both in common. We're both very good at shoveling it. You know, that made me think of a circumstance when I was in Cuba, and I was at Radio Havana Cuba for 3 years, and the system was based on Radio Moscow's broadcast system. It was Soviet technicians that set it up and everything, and the same thing with the censorship. We used to have, this was ludicrous, but any news scripts we would have to give the day before they were recorded and broadcast. And then somebody in the newsroom one day, an American working with me, he said, "Oh, we have a secret here. What we do is we change the date on the paper."
Unbelievable.
And then we record that one, and they are reading the script from the day before. And mm-hmm. they've been doing this for over 20 years, and nobody's caught on. Unless somebody's caught on and they went, "Oh, well, this is the way things are done," you know? But when you did Vasily's Weekend, I mean, you just gave an example of the Lumberjack song, and I was kind of wondering if the censor said, "Why is Lumberjack wearing ladies' clothing?" You know?
Yeah, but it didn't, you know, I guess it's just a lack of knowledge of the English language. And I mean, or maybe it's just a word that I use in the beginning of our conversation, narrow-mindedness in a way. You know, they probably didn't even pick up the word in the song. I mean, they didn't have the lyric sheet in front of them. I mean, they weren't supposed to. So I guess they just didn't pick it up. They didn't understand what the hell was I, you know, what the song was saying. So they called me in and said, you know, "What is this?" And I gave them the story.
So that was one example, but I mean, was there ever a time when you were doing the show that they came to you and said, "Look, we would rather you not play this piece of music for whatever reason"?
Let me think. Not really, no. I mean, maybe there was an instance or two, but it's really nothing to kind of, you know, write home about. What I would mention was... towards the end of one of the reasons why I left Radio Moscow in 1992, sad to say, you know, you have all these new young people all of a sudden running the World Service, and you would think that after the old guard has left, these young people would actually, you know, breathe some new life into the station, and you could do Vasily's Weekend, I don't know, two times a week, or maybe do it live and stuff. And all of a sudden, it just goes the other way. It just goes in the opposite direction, because these young people actually started cutting whole segments out of my show. I mean, after it was already cleared for broadcast, they would, for some reason, take it off the air, cut a whole segment out without any explanation, put it back on the air. And of course, you know what a splice is and what a very bad splice is. You know, and that's when the problems started. And I would basically go to these people, to the new head of the World Service, and I would say, you know, "What's going on? Why didn't you tell me about it? You know, I could have taken care of this." He said, "You know, I don't have to report to you, comrade." You know, but I said, "What was the problem? What didn't you like? You know, what was the problem?" And he said, "Well, you know, your humor is getting out of hand. You know, you shouldn't make fun of what's happening in the country." And some of the things I said was like, you know, when there wasn't much food in the stores, I would say, but at the same time, like McDonald's, Moscow's first McDonald's open, I said, "All right, gang, I'm going to go ask for political asylum at Moscow's McDonald's," you know.
And, but the truth must have been, you must have made fun of Russian toilet paper.
I did. The reason why I did that was because... not because I thought it was funny or not, but because I knew there were stereotypes in the West, and there still are. You know, they have Britney Spears flying in to play a live concert, a live gig in Moscow, and she brings in like 30 tons of toilet paper because somebody said that toilet paper doesn't exist in Russia. So, you know, it's these things that I made fun of, and it's these things that for some reason got cut out of the show, and I got fed up, and I just at one point I just slammed the door and I left.
You know, it's interesting that you say that because there's a Canadian that I know. He had worked for the CBC and he also worked for Radio Moscow probably around that time. And he said, even though a new management came in, the Soviet Union no longer exists. It became Russia, and then it became Voice of Russia World Service. He said at that point he was expecting some type of new life to come into the World Service. But, I mean, recently when I listened, which is maybe like 2 weeks ago, Voice of Russia now, to me, sounds like it did maybe 20, 30 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, it's the same type of sound, the same type of presentation and style. You know, reading the 3-minute news bulletin on the half hour, followed by the jingle, followed by a feature program, and that's it. Which surprised me, if you think about how radio in Russia has changed so much.
You know, it's interesting that you mentioned this. I'll tell you, I'll let you in on a little secret. About, I'd say about 10 months ago, a friend of mine that I worked with at the World Service in the 80s, he left for Canada. Maybe we're speaking about the same person. I don't know. He left for Canada, and recently he came back, and now he's back at Radio Moscow as an announcer. He gives me a call, and he says, look, the World Service is going back to 24 hours a day. They want to do a totally different radio station. They want to make it very contemporary, you know, very hip, and there's going to be a lot of production involved. And I hear that they're interested in maybe offering you a job and maybe bringing you back, you know. I said, well, okay, you know, tell them that they can call me up. We'll talk about it, you know. So one thing leads to another, and I go back there for just a little tour. And I haven't been there for many years in that building at the World Service studios. And I walk in there, and it's amazing. It's like you're walking in, you're going through a time tunnel, a time machine, a black hole, call it whatever you want. But it's like I entered from 2009, I go back straight to 1986 or 85 or 84. The smell is the same. The people are the same. The attitudes are the same. The pictures on the walls are the same. You know, it's like, and the people lead the same lifestyles they actually did back in those days. Not to mention the fact that they make so little money, and yet they're still working for that organization. They've been there for like 20, 30 years, and they have no intention of leaving that organization. It's amazing.
You know, it's funny because there's certain voices that, I mean, amongst not just yours, but other voices that are recognizable with Radio Moscow and Voice of Russia, and that would be Joe Adamov, who's no longer with us. You know, I've heard so many funny stories about Joe. Was he really a larger-than-life character?
He was a monster. Both on the air and off the air, he had this. You know what? He was in with all the propaganda again, and ideology, and you know, and the things that people were allowed to say and weren't allowed to say. You know, off mic, off the air, it was an amazing atmosphere at Radio Moscow, both at the North American service and the World Service. First of all of us spoke English. I mean, the only time we spoke Russian was when we were on the streets. The camaraderie was amazing, you know, the friendships, the parties that people actually, you know, went to. And Joe Adamov was a major entertainer in the corridors of Radio Moscow. He couldn't stop talking. I mean, this guy had so much energy in him. I mean, it was amazing where he got it from. He basically could not stop talking. And at times he would, you know, he was like a radio station. He would repeat stories over and over again. He had these jokes that would go into rotation. You know, they would, this joke would come in at 10 o'clock in the morning to be expected to be repeated for, you know, for listeners in North America at, I don't know, in the evening or something. He had so much energy. He had so much knowledge of life in general. He was amazing. I mean, it was, at times you'd get bored, of course, you know, when you have somebody talking over your ear for 24 hours, you know, you'd kind of get tired. But if he felt that you were kind of bored, he would find the next victim and go talk that other person to death.
You know, another voice that's very well known on the station, of course, was at the time he was known as Carl Igorov. Now he's known as Carl Watts.
Right.
What was what's the deal with the name change?
Well, see, he was always Carl Watts. I mean, he's originally from Canada, as you might know.
Yeah.
And the thing was, I don't know. You know, to this day, I really don't know what the story there was. I can only predict or, you know, guess that maybe two reasons. Maybe reason number one, Carl and his brother, George Watts, who currently is the voice of Russia Today. But before that, he worked for a really goofy radio station called Radio Peace and Progress.
I remember them.
Yeah. And they sounded very much alike, basically, back in those days. But what I'm trying to say, maybe reason number one is, I don't know, maybe they were afraid that some of their, you know, buddies or somebody they knew or maybe some relatives would hear them on the air and say, hey, you know, the boys are working for the Soviets, you know, the boys are working for the Kremlin. It was either that or reason number two was probably because Watts in Russian didn't sound very Russian. In fact, it sounded quite Jewish. So maybe they were afraid of that, or maybe somebody at the, as it was known then, the radio committee told them, said, you know, guys, think of another name, you know, because Watts isn't very Russian. You know, maybe Yegorov is very Russian, Ivanov or Ivanov, you know. Think of something Russian. So, it's either one or two or maybe both reasons. I don't know.
At the time in the Soviet Union, I had some friends who were from East Germany and used to work for the East German film studio, the DEFA, and they said the DEFA would make musicals every now and again, but occasionally the Central Committee or the Ministry of Culture would look at the musical and say, look, we cannot release this. So the producers would release the soundtrack on the black market, and all of a sudden it would start getting airplay, which forced the government to release the film. Did this kind of thing happen in the Soviet Union concerning music?
I would probably say, not to a very major sort of degree, there were a lot of rock and pop groups that weren't official, that were underground. And, of course, the bootleg scene, the cassette scene, the reel-to-reel scene was booming in those days. And again, you know, comes Perestroika and Gorbachev, and because the authorities realized that these groups like Time Machine or Bravo, just to name a few, you know, had so many fans and a cult following, they probably started negotiating with them in terms, well, look, we'll give you an album deal or something. We'll let you record on the Soviet state-owned record label Melodia. If you tone your lyrics down maybe a little bit, or we go through your material together and pick out the things that are, you know, that are good. So I guess in that respect, yeah, maybe something similar happened.
You know, there was a big milestone in the 1980s when Paul McCartney went to the Soviet Union to record an album.
Mm-hmm.
Which is actually, it's a good album. And I remember when it was released, it wasn't released in the West. It only came out in the Soviet Union. And in places like the United Kingdom or the U.S., it was brought in as an import.
Yeah, but he didn't actually come to Russia to the Soviet Union to record it. No, I mean, he recorded it in wherever it was that he recorded it, but it wasn't in the Soviet Union. It was especially for the Soviet Union.
For the Soviet Union, yeah. You know, after you left Radio Moscow, what did you decide to do? Did you want to stay in radio? Because you also went into television for a while.
Yeah. First of all, let me put it this way. I mean, if I had my way, of course, I'd stay in shortwave radio in one way or another because I really love shortwave. And I still, to this day, sometimes when I'm out at the country, dachas, as they call it here, you know, at the country house, I still have an antenna out there and a shortwave radio, and I sometimes still tune in. That's number one. What I did after Radio Moscow, I joined one of Moscow's first commercial radio stations. They were FM radio stations. They were just starting to come on the air because the FM band, as we know it in the United States and in Europe, you know, the 88 to 108 megahertz band, never existed in Russia. They had their own FM band. And at the same time, they had all these imported and Japanese radios that had the FM band. So anyway, to make a long story short, commercial radio stations started appearing on the Western FM band. And I joined one of the first radio stations, which was Radio 7, and we broadcast in Russian, and later started broadcasting in Russian and in English for the expats, English language expats in Moscow. And at that time, this early 90s, they were up to about 400,000 English language expats in Moscow. And so I was program director and also morning and evening presenter. Then after that, I went on to some other radio stations and did a lot of voice production. What else? And yeah, in the late 90s, MTV Russia went on the air, and I was offered a job as, you know, the voice, the official voice of the channel, doing voiceovers, promos and production. And then one day somebody said, you know, why don't we try this guy in front of the camera? Hey, Vasily, you got any ideas for a show? I said, yeah, let's do a rock and roll request show, you know, like I've always done. You know, a rock video, sort of a two-way communication. I mean, like interactive show, as they're called. And we did one show, we did two shows, and the rest is history. You know, I became Russia's oldest VJ.
But you're also now involved with some radio podcasts.
There was a time about 2005, I was taking some time off from television and radio, and I just decided to take a year or year and a half just to take it easy and reflect on, you know, what the hell is wrong with my life, you know. and I started listening to podcasts, English language podcasts from the States, from all over the place. And one night, sitting out in my country house, sitting with my friend Jack Daniels, you know, it was raining outside, and I was listening to some podcast from I don't know where. It all of a sudden occurred to me that this is great. Why isn't anybody doing podcasting in Russia? And nobody was. Nobody even knew what podcasting was. So right there and then, the idea came about to open Russia's first podcasting directory, podcasting site, and we were proud to say we are Russia's first and basically only podcasting site, and we're going strong. And I do my own podcast twice a week, and by the way, that's called Vasily's Weekend. Actually, no, the weekend.
You came full circle.
Yeah, you know that I still use some of the old production stuff that I had for Vasily's Weekend. Actually, the weekend edition of the podcast is called Vasily's Weekend, but the one that comes out during the week or at the beginning of the week is called the Big Podcast.
You know, it's funny because, you know, a few years ago, a lot of people were saying, you know, podcasting is never going to catch on. Nobody's going to be listening. This was mainly what you were hearing from radio stations. But we've seen in the last 3 years, there are some podcasts now that are getting literally thousands and thousands of hit for a show.
That is amazing. Yeah. I remember 2005 when we just started. And I would listen to people like Adam Curry on his Daily Source Code, and he would talk about this quite often. And there were a lot of people that were saying it's not going to go anywhere, you know, you can't make money off of it. And yeah, here we are today, and there are podcasters that make tons of money. Not all of them, but you have to have a certain talent, maybe, you know, you have to have a certain understanding of how to do this right. But yeah, it's amazing. I mean, if you look at Russia in this respect, you have all the major radio stations, you have television stations that are all doing podcasts now. Of course, here in Russia, there are a lot of pessimists saying, well, this is just a fad, it's going to go away. But you know, I'll tell you something, it's interesting when on the streets I'm approached by someone who comes up, or like I'm at a shopping mall or someone. Somebody, a young kid comes up to me and says, hey, Vasily, thanks for a great podcast. Now, the reason why I say this is because a few years ago when I was doing a lot of stuff on television, I could be seen on television, people would come up to me and say, hey, Vasily, we saw your show, you know, we loved it. Or, hey, Vasily, we're going to kill you, you know, we hate you, or whatever. But it was in regards to the television show. Now I'm proud to say that people come up to me, not that often, but they do, and they say, you know, hey, we heard your podcast. Great, you know, great job. Thank you. Keep it up. Or could you say hi to my girlfriend or boyfriend or something, you know, on the show? So it's catching on here.
Since leaving Radio Moscow, does it still happen that people will still contact you by email or look your name up on Google? I mean, when I was thinking about, you know, who do I want to have on the show? And, you know, I remembered, because I found these tapes that I had of you doing some air checks. And I went, oh, that's who I want. And I entered Vasily Strelnikov, and I got some YouTube links and stuff like that, and I came across your site in Russian. But, I mean, that's an unusual case. But have you ever received letters from people that maybe listened 20 years ago and say, you know, I used to listen to you 20 years ago. What are you doing today?
Yeah, in fact, I did get, about a year ago, I received an email from a young lady. Her name is Jan. I'm not going to, you know, give her her full name, but her name is Jan. She is from the States. She was a young girl that used to write to Vasily's Weekend. And, in fact, she was one of the first to actually call us. We had a thing called the hotline. And what it was... Oh, there's my phone going off. Probably a hotline. Anyway, we had a thing called the hotline where we would ask listeners from around the world to call us at a specific hour, GMT, and I would pick up the phone. We would record the conversation and then edit that into the show and kind of liven it up, you know. So there was a girl from the States that used to call me up, and all of a sudden she finds my email and she writes in about a year ago, and we started corresponding with her. There have been other people writing in, not that often, but yeah, sometimes, you know, people still kind of come across your site, come across your email. That happens once in a while.
You know, it's interesting to think, because at the time you were doing that show, Radio Moscow, to find Radio Moscow on a shortwave dial was so easy. It was almost every 10 or sometimes 20 kilohertz, and it was around the world. I mean, not too many people today have that kind of coverage. I mean, today you're lucky if you have one frequency.
Yeah. And it's kind of, well, I mean, it's understandable why that is happening. There are various reasons why that is happening, and I don't think we're going to go into that right now. But, you know, it's all going onto the web. It's you know, priorities are changing. And you're right about the fact that Radio Moscow used to be this mega house, you know, monster of a broadcaster. In fact, when I was working for Radio Moscow, we were told that in comparison, say, to the BBC or the VOA, put together, we had four times advantage in terms of frequencies and transmitters around the world. And, you know, it's understandable how much money was spent actually running these transmitters and all this equipment, but, you know, what do you want? I mean, the Soviet Union was all hot air, you know. It was all ideology, and it was so important to get that message out there and perhaps maybe convert some people to communism. That's why Radio Moscow was all over the place. It was even on AM in Moscow.
Now, during the time that you did that show, did you ever have contact with some other on-air personalities, for example, like John Peel in the UK or others that would write, that would correspond with you?
You know, I actually did meet John Peel in Moscow. He was here, I think this was in 88. He was here for a few days. They were doing a documentary on the underground Russian rock scene. And I met him, and I actually did a little interview with him that aired on my show. One of the highlights, I guess, one of the highs of my shortwave broadcasting career was meeting Casey Kasem in Moscow. Of all the people you meet in Moscow, Casey Kasem was here, and this was all part of a big propaganda sort of a thing between the American peace organization and the Soviet Peace Committee and whatever. They did a Soviet-American peace walk from St. Petersburg, which was then called Leningrad. Apparently this group of these Americans and Soviets walked from Leningrad to Moscow, And it was all done in the name of peace and cooperation and, you know, bilateral ties and the strengthening of friendship and blah, blah, blah. And for some reason, Casey Kasem was there, too. Maybe he got lost. I don't know. But I met him in Moscow, and I had my tape recorder with me, and we immediately did a little show that also went out over Radio Moscow. And I asked him to record a couple of liners for my show. So for a couple of months after meeting him, he would occasionally tune into Vasily's Weekend and hear something like, "Hi, I'm Casey Kasem, and you're listening to Vasily's Weekend." Casey Kasem on Radio Moscow.
I don't know if that sounds frightening or what. You know, there's actually something that you played on your show, and I believe it was probably in the mid-1980s, and I remember, or maybe even after 1985, but I remember you playing Billy Bragg.
Yeah.
And this was when, I think it was an album that came out, and the single from it was called Help Save the Youth of America. And I remember you playing on the show a version that he had recorded in Moscow.
All right, let me think about that. I'm not sure it was the song you're talking about. Billy Bragg was in Moscow in the summer of 1985 for a big international youth festival. I think that's what it was called. It was called the International, let's see, in the Russian it was called Международный фестиваль. Yeah, the International Festival of Youth or Youth Festival. Which was all, again, it was, you know, a propaganda showcase. But nevertheless, you had delegations, you know, youth organizations coming, flying in from all over the world, Australia, New Zealand, you know, Holland, America, Canada, Britain, Germany. And it was 10 days of mayhem in Moscow. And there were a lot of people here, including celebrities and including Billy Bragg. Yeah, he was here. In fact, you know, we all know what everything but the girl is, who they are. They were here. Mm-hmm. So I met them in an elevator in one of Moscow's big hotels. We rode the elevator together. That was quite an experience. But yeah, I mean, all these people were here in Moscow performing for the youth festival. And I guess that's how I got a hold of the album. I didn't get to interview him, which is a pity. But that's probably the way I got the LP.
Did you have much of a chance to interview these singers, I mean, that did come to the Soviet Union to perform on rare occasions?
You know, that's one of the highlights of the whole Radio Moscow gig for me, because you had an excuse. You had a little red ID card which said Radio Moscow World Service, or in Russian it said the State Committee for Radio and Television Broadcasting, and it had a big star and a hammer and sickle, and that was your ticket, that was your joyride, and that let you basically do things. You can do anything with that kind of ID. And so when a couple of friends of mine told me that Benny Andersson and Björn Ulvaeus of ABBA were in Moscow as tourists back in 1983, they were here because they were working on Chess, the musical. And they came to Moscow just to take a look around and see what life was here. And I found out about them. I mean, that little card let me actually go to the hotel they were staying at, call them up, you know, tell them who I was, and make an appointment for an interview. You know, that same little card let me interview people like Peter Gabriel, Annie Lennox, who else? Carlos Santana. You know, there were a lot of people flying into Moscow for one reason or another, sometimes as, you know, sometimes as private citizens, as tourists, sometimes, you know, playing a concert or something, or doing something as part of a propaganda sort of a thing. So I actually did get to meet a lot of interesting people, a lot of celebrities from around the world. I mean, I'll never forget the interview I did with Annie Lennox in one of the nightclubs here in Moscow. My hand was shaking. I mean, did you ever experience that? I mean, you're sitting in front of this megastar and you're talking to her of all places in Soviet Russia, and your hand is shaking because you have sweet dreams going through your brain, pumping in your brain. you know, and here she is. She's actually talking to you in my hand. I mean, I felt so weird. I had this, the microphone was in my right hand. It was shaking. It was shaking, you know. And can you imagine any Lennox saying things like, and we believe that what's happening right now is actually a sign that the Soviet Union is going through a phase of perestroika and glasnost, and this is good for the whole world, and we salute it. You know, can you imagine Annie Lennox saying that sort of thing? It's amazing. I mean, it's far out, really.
You know, I was just thinking, at any point you were interviewing these people and you contacted them, I mean, you know, you had, like, you know, the Red Pass with the Star and, you know, the Central Committee radio, and did it ever happen? They must have been thinking at some point, I think the KGB is following us. How did this guy track us down?
Well, maybe some of them did have that. You know, there was a lot of paranoia, you know, in regards to the Soviet Union. I mean, the Soviet Union was a scary country. There's no doubt about it. But it wasn't as scary as, you know, I mean, life was possible on this on planet Soviet Union. You know, now that you mentioned it, I remember when there was this big, what was it called? It was a big Greenpeace-sponsored media event. It was for Rainbow Warrior, and it was this double album that came out. I think it was called Breakthrough or something. It was in the late 80s, I think it was 88 or 89, and all these stars actually came to Moscow as part of this big media event, and one of the people present was Edge, you know, U2's guitarist. So I was following these singers all around Moscow. I had accreditation, press accreditation. I had my big Radio Moscow card. And I approached Edge at Red Square, and I said, hey, you mind saying a few words for Radio Moscow? I'm with Radio Moscow, and you mind if I, you know, we do a little interview? This will take like 3 minutes. He said, where are you from? I said, I'm from Radio Moscow. Oh, Radio Moscow. Yeah, I listen to that crap. Yeah, you know, it's, you know, every time I feel sad, you know, nothing to do, I tune into Radio Moscow. I mean, I get a big laugh out of all the shit you put on the air. It's, yeah, sure, what do you want to know? You know, let's talk. I said, yeah, all right, forget it. You know, the magic was gone.
Vasile, thank you very much for taking some time out to talk today. This has been a great pleasure because, like I said, I used to listen to your show on the weekends back in the 1980s. And I remember thinking, this cannot be the USSR that I'm tuning into.
Well, maybe I did my job right. You know, maybe that was what it was intended to be. You know, a show that didn't sound like it was coming out of Moscow, but in fact it did.
I'm a lumberjack and I'm okay. I sleep all night and I work all day.
He's a lumberjack and he's okay. He sleeps all night and he works all day.
I cut down trees, I eat my lunch, I go to the lavatory. On Wednesdays I go shopping and have buttered scones for tea.
He cuts down trees, eats his lunch, he goes to the lavatory.
I'm okay. I sleep all night and I work all day. I cut down trees, I skip and jump. I like to press wildflowers. I put on women's clothing and hang around in bars.
I cut down trees, I skip and jump. He likes to press wildflowers. He puts on women's clothing and hang around in bars.
I'm a lumberjack and I'm okay. I sleep all night. I cut down trees, I wear high heels, suspenders and a bra. I wish I'd been a girly, just like my dear papa.
He cuts down trees, he wears high heels, suspenders
A song about the plight of the Canadian lumberjack. The Lumberjack Song by Michael Palin. Actually, well, it's Monty Python, but he actually wrote the lyrics to that song. And that goes out to Vasile and all the other Monty Python fans out there. Let's now move, actually, because we still have a few minutes, to some of the people that have joined the Happy Station Facebook page. They are David Gorin, Dan Hensley, Mariana Kohe, Rick Sheeder, and Gregory Jacoby, and somebody here that used to work at Radio Netherlands, Ginger De Silva. That's right. She joined the Happy Station Facebook page and my friends list. And if you want to join the Happy Station Facebook page, it's easy to do if you're already signed up to the Facebook. Just do a search for the Happy Station Show and then click on join the group. And you're more than welcome to add me as one of your friends. Just do a search for moi. Keith Perron, and my family name is Perron, and you know, add me as a friend. I like to talk to all of the listeners as well, and you'll find some interesting people on my list as well that you will probably know. Anyway, that's it. That's all we have time for. Our email address, by the way, if you want to get in touch with us, is pcj.happystation@gmail.com. That's pcj.happystation@gmail.com. And let me think. Our postal address is Happy Station, 8th floor, number 47, Lane, L-A-N-E, 31, Section 1, San Min Road. That's S-A-N like Norman, M like Mother, I like Ivan, N like Norman Road, San Min Road. Banqiao, B-A-N like Norman, C-I-A-O, Taipei, Taiwan, ROC 22070. A couple of special programs coming up in November. We're going to do another one of our DX tributes. And one of my guests next month is going to be Dodie Cowan, who's also known now as Deborah Ray, the author. For a number of years, she hosted His and Hers with Jerry Cowan on Radio Netherlands International. She will be joining me on the show next month, so tune in for that. So I'm going to leave you right now because it's time to go and have dinner. And once again, this edition of Happy Station is airing to all regions. Next week, we will have our regular program. So, on behalf of our production assistant, Johan Backer, our technician, Kevin Lee, this is Keith Perron, all the way in Taipei, Taiwan, wishing you well, hoping that you join us again very soon. So, until next time, friends, so long, au revoir, auf Wiedersehen, adios, amigos, and sayonara.
This is the Happy Station.
That's what happiness is. Happiness is. Different things to different people. That's what happiness is.
Happiness is the Happy Station, bringing you some weekly peace, cheer, and joy. Remember that? Hello, I'm Keith Perron, and I hope that you will join me Thursdays at 1 and 15 hours UTC for the Happy Station and La Estación de la Alegría. right here via Radio Miami International. Say some happiness, say some happiness, say some happiness.